Welcome to Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks. The Indiana General Assembly recently wrapped up the 2024 legislative session. What bills passed this session? My guest is State Representative Tanya Paff, Democrat of Terre Haute. Representative Paff, welcome back to Policy and Politics.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're probably glad to be back in the classroom at this point, right?
Well, I tell you what, teenagers do listen to me more than the General Assembly does. So.
Well,
kind of like that.
And that and the fact that it's tough to get much done when you're in the super minority, too.
But that is true. You know, I'm just going to jump in real quick. We had around 175 bills passed.
Okay.
And I think there were five Democrat bills.
Wow.
So if you think about the numbers, there's more than five out of 175 Democrats in Indiana.
But that's all the majority would let go through the process, huh?
That is correct.
Well, the one that got some coverage late in the session, and I talked about this on this show a couple of weeks ago, one of the newest members of the General Assembly, State Senator Spencer Deary, he put legislation out there trying to push Senate Bill 202, which now is Senate Enrolled Act 202, on intellectual diversity. Give us your take on this bill, first of all.
So to me, this was more of a attack on higher education. They really attacked, there were two parts of the bill. One was on trustees, and that got removed. But the one that passed was basically attacking tenure. So Senator Deary's point was that some students don't feel comfortable questioning professors. And because of that, because of the tenure, we can't get rid of them. So now, according to this bill, if a student has a complaint, they go complain, and then it works its way up, and the professor can eventually get fired.
And again, the complaint could be, well, I don't like the professor's opinion because, you know, he's talking about climate change, and there's no proof in my mind there's climate change. Is that a good example?
That is a great example. And so when we think of college and higher ed, it's a different beast than K-12. Public education, K-12, that's different than higher ed. Higher ed, you are paying for it. So you are choosing your classes. You are choosing your professors. And also, your professors are trying to educate you in more than just one traditional way. So if you disagree, to me, I went to college. Sure, I disagreed with professors, and that's okay because it made me think. It just makes you think more. So I think this is a terrible bill. I worry about our ability to attract and retain professors in Indiana.
And I had David Sanders on the program, who's a professor at Purdue, and he's also a city councilman in West Lafayette. But he feels like it's really going to slow down the curriculum to a certain point, because then if someone does object, and you've got to try to make two sides of something that there's really only one side where the facts clearly exist, and side two, it's like, you know, crazy side. But here it is. We got to offer it, perhaps, if someone complains. It just, how did this become statute? I don't get it.
It got pushed through.
That's what happens when you control everything with way too much power. But you mentioned the Board of Trustees. I call that the Senator Good Amendment. Explain that a bit.
So that was a great amendment. So I was very supportive of that. So basically, your boards of trustees in colleges are chosen different ways. Some are governor appointments, you know. And we don't at ISU have a local person on our board. So his amendment was simply to make sure that someone from Vigo County was on the board.
And that would be for all colleges, right?
That would be for all state colleges and universities, yes.
And so the idea would be, you know, somebody in the community, a taxpayer that's actually on the ground local, would have some representation on these boards, right?
Yes, and I thought it was a great amendment. And he has said that he's going to come back next year and offer it. So,
well, what's the objection to that?
Oh, the objection, there was no objection. It passed through. But when so the bill was in two parts. So that was in the part that had to do with the trustee language, and they just took all that out.
That conference committee took
it. Yeah, man. Everything was out on that. So the only thing that was left was the attack on tenure and professors.
Oh, the sausage grinder was working extra hard on that one. I will say, since Spencer Deary is not in the studio, I'll just kind of glance at his news release, and he claims on March 13th, Indiana just sent a strong signal that our state is committed to academic freedom, free expression, and intellectual diversity for all students and faculties. Universities that fail to foster intellectually diverse communities that challenge both teachers and learners fail to reach their potential. This measured bill makes it significantly less likely that any university will shortchange our students in that way. And I'm not going to read the rest of it, but anything else you want to say about
Senate
bill?
I would just agree with the very first part of that we were doing just fine without this bill.
Yeah, what's the point? But here we are.
Don't need it.
Okay, but it's in the it's now a statute in the state of Indiana. Let's move on down. I bet your best bill of the session, just looking at this from a former legislator's standpoint, but this is not always easy to do. House Enrolled Act 1004, 13th check is going to be available for nearly 175,000 educators in our Indiana public retirement system. Explain that, Representative.
So the 13th check, it's not a full 13th check. It's, you can kind of say it's a bonus check for retirees. I'm not sure why the Indiana General Assembly set this up years ago for just an extra check. And traditionally, it's between $150 and $450. They usually get it around sometime in the fall. So let's just make sure we understand. The money was there last year, and the General Assembly said, no, you don't get it. So then Bob Cherry, who's retired, he just retired. This was like his last thing. He's like, all these public retirees have worked for years and years, and we've always given them a 13th check. Why aren't we doing it? So at the very last minute, I know this is shocking to you, we passed. Okay, so it got defeated in the Senate, came back. So during conference committee now, it is, there's some certain formula from what time you retired. You either get the 13th check, and the more recent retirees now get 1% COLA. So 1% COLA would probably be better because you're getting a percentage of your salary added every single year.
Okay.
But if it's going to take a long time to build that up. So if you're older, the 13th check makes more sense.
And a COLA, of course, cost of living adjustment. But typically, do you happen to recall the fiscal on this? How many millions does this cost us?
About $34 million.
Good
but again, okay. During the budget, it was already set aside. We just decided to withhold it last year.
And we're flush with money right now, right?
We're doing just fine. Yes.
Yeah, we're okay. So, all right, anything else related to education that you want to touch on that passed this session?
Yeah, there's a couple that are got a lot of attention. The third grade literacy bill, it's Senate Bill 1. So basically, here's what happens. We're going back to high stakes testing. So from now on, there's a test called iRead. So all second graders will have to take iRead. So about 55% should pass in second grade. If they fail, then that leaves 45%. Third grade, they will be targeted for remediation, help to get them up to speed. At the end of third grade, that 45% will take it again. So let's say 25% of them pass. So I'm left with 20%. Then you fail again, that's number two. Then you mandatory summer school, okay? If you don't go to summer school, you get held back. If you go to summer school, that 20%, they will get tested one more time. So probably pick up another 10% then. So then that 10% left will be automatically withheld. They'll have to repeat third grade again.
And why'd they pick third grade? Is that just like a good number to, from an elementary standpoint, to be in the right kind of maturing level perhaps or not?
So much discussion about that. As a high school teacher, and I've talked to so many teachers, third grade is way too late. Look, every kindergarten and first grade teacher knows if a kid is on target or not. They can tell you at the end of first grade if a kid needs more remediation or not. So for me, we're going back to high stakes testing. I like the bill. Everything's great except the remediation part. So I am a big fan of pre-K, you know, get the kids in. It would help solve the childcare issue.
Right.
But, you know, get kids in, learn their ABCs. Stardom literacy at a very young age. I'm not sure why we're waiting till third grade. And if you talk to third graders, they know what's going on. You know, they get held back and they watch all their buddies go to fourth grade. So then they don't want to come to school and it's just kind of a snowball effect.
So that probably did have a lot of debate, I assume.
Hours and hours.
Yeah.
So the bill is really good except the retention piece. And I'm going to do one more because I'm a high school teacher.
Sure.
Senate Bill 185 was a cell phone bill. So I just came from Terre Haute North today, taught today. There's no question teenagers are very addicted to their phones. And they're disruptive, right? It's really hard for a teenager to concentrate doing the Pythagorean theorem anyway.
It's hard for an adult to focus.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, during the cell phone bill, I looked around and 90% of the General Assembly was on their cell phones.
Sure.
Not even listening to the debate. But so this cell phone bill basically says that no cell phones during instruction time. Okay. So
they got to be off or where are they got to be at that point?
It's up to the teacher.
Okay.
So in my classroom, they put them on my desk. But some people have cell phone jail. They have little, you know, bags that kids put them in. So starting in July 1st, when this goes in effect, the idea is no cell phones during classroom instruction. Now, remember, I don't know about over here. I'm pretty sure everyone has a computer now, right?
Right.
Because in Vigo County, yeah, we have either tablets or we have computers. So the teacher can use those for any kind of resources they need. So I highly supported this bill, and hopefully it will help the teachers as well say, look, no cell phones. Put them away.
We're getting an update on the recent Indiana General Assembly that just concluded with Terre Haute Representative Tanya Paff. She is a Democrat. This is what, your fifth session you've been in now?
That was number six. I'm up for re-election again.
Oh, that's right. So that happened kind of fast. So here you are. Happy Hour got a lot of attention. That's something that I know, being on public policy when I served, they never did like the idea of happy hour, worried that people might drink too much in a specific amount of time and it might make things a little more dangerous. But then COVID happened, and now the Restaurants Association and others are trying to figure out a way to get people to come back out. And I guess happy hour made it this year. Explain that.
It did. I was surprised as well. You know, the tourism industry, the restaurant industry, they're still rebounding, right? I mean, you go to restaurants, you see a lot of people, but it's nothing like it was before.
Sure.
So this was kind of sold as, hey, we need to spur some more growth and money for the state of Indiana. So it passed.
Now, Illinois, of course, keeps expanding their cannabis, and I know that I've had a couple of guests on this program talking about that. Lawrenceville, Illinois, recently decided to bring a dispensary to their little community right across the river bridge in Vincennes. You've had a few bills filed this past session and in past legislative sessions. Are those things moving at all?
So every year there's at least six bills, by both sides, by the way, Republicans and Democrats, talking about, can we please pass medical? Can we pass medical and recreational? Can we at least study it? Can we do anything with cannabis? And every time it just falls to deaf ears. And also, we had two amendments in the Democrat side try to put it on bills to, again, the push really, I believe, is for medical first. And I think that makes the most sense.
Sure.
To at least try to help people with, you know, veterans, cancer, all you know, cannabis is very good for lots of different ailments.
Arthritis.
You know. Arthritis. So there's many different uses for it, and to at least do medical first. But again, the supermajority just does not want to have that conversation. I've been told that next year with the new governor, there might be a shot.
And I know Governor Holcomb's attitude has been, until the feds take it off the federally restricted schedule, he didn't want anything to do with it.
Well, that was his prerogative, but now we're an island.
Yeah, because you got Michigan's got it going on, Illinois, of course, now Ohio.
And Kentucky.
And Kentucky's even got for a
prescription. Kentucky's medical, yeah.
Yeah, for medical, rather.
Yep.
Let's see, what else happened? I know one thing that caught my attention a couple of times, and of course, it's harder to get legislative news these days, as you know, as the statewide press is not what it once was. But why do I keep reading that we've got some kind of a big billion-dollar shortfall when it comes to Medicaid? Could you help us understand that a little bit better?
You know, that is a good question. So FSSA had some troubles and apparently ended up $1 billion behind.
So, and again, that's B with a billion, folks.
That's a lot of money.
It
just came to light right before session started. And of course, we had that was too late to file bills, but we tried a lot of different amendments like, hey, can we study why this happened? Can we put some parameters about FSSA? And not much happened. And I still don't know where that $1 billion is, but I will tell you one of the biggest problems that FSSA has decided to do. So there are, I can't remember the word, it's like really severely handicapped people, so children. And the state decided years ago to pay the parents to stay home with them.
I know what you're talking about, paraplegic children, but yet there is a term for it.
Yes, it's not direct service providers. It's something like that.
Yes.
So because we can't find enough nurses, there's not enough daycares for really compromised health kids, then they pay the parents a certain amount of money. And FSSA has decided to completely change that system and not pay these parents as much money as they did. The whole thing was, every day in session, there were these parents there with their kids saying, please don't cut our money. So it ended up, FSSA is going to look at it and figure out what to do. But the problem with what I had was, you misplace $1 billion and you can't, I'm a representative and you can't tell me where it is.
And I guess you tried some clever amendments to try to get their attention.
So many.
And again, they just can't explain where is the $1 billion. I mean,
and it makes no sense to me because, you know, if my child takes my credit card and goes and spends money, I'm not going to say, well, let's just forget about that and move on. I'm going to say, where'd that money go?
Sure.
And so as Democrats, we did, I think, 10 different amendments trying to give some ownership and trying to figure out where that money was. And we still got no answers.
Now, to the average person listening, and they can't fathom how in the world do you misplace $1 billion, is it fair to say that we know no one probably took it, they just can't account for it? Is that a fair statement to say it? Or how would you explain it?
There's a lot of different theories. Some of it is, so let's go back to the parents of the severely handicapped students. There's a middle person. So the state contracts with a middle person. Middle person pays the parents. So maybe some of it went there.
Okay.
There's so many rumors flying around that I'm just still not sure. I really do think, though, within the next 6 months, we'll get some answers. I don't think it's over. I just think session's over.
Well, especially with being an election year, and if there really is $1 billion, you can't really give a good example of where it went to. Yeah, I think that should be a pretty significant issue to talk about.
I agree, and I think people should keep asking.
So I guess if you go to a Cracker Barrel session, ask your legislators about where's $1 billion for Medicaid, huh? How about that? Okay, you've had a few of those lately, too. In the remaining moments that we've got in today's show, let's talk about a few other things that maybe we didn't touch on that people need to know about. Well, what do we leave out? I mean, like, when it comes to the environment, I guess there's two things that caught my attention, and this has been pretty aggressive the past few sessions. Wetlands, what wetlands? I mean, Indiana's pretty determined to get rid of all wetlands unless they're federally designated. Is that right?
We stripped more wetland protections. And
why?
The reason claimed at the General Assembly is so that we can build more houses, which is okay, but we also need our green spaces. So that was a big fight. And then also the other environmental one was hunting bobcats. So if you're for hunting bobcats or you're not, here's the legislation. So DNR is going to study it, and they're going to figure out where the problem is, because we were told that most of the problem is in southern Indiana, and these are predators that are eating chickens and dogs, and that it's kind of gotten out of hand. So what this bill says is that DNR can pick one county and open up bobcat season for one day. I mean, it can be that specific. So first of all, they're going to study and see what problem we have. And then
try to eradicate bobcats, huh?
Not all of them.
Right. But at least reduce the population considerably.
Apparently. So you remember when we had a really big deer problem in Brown County?
Absolutely.
And they opened up Brown County State Park for, I believe it was 2 days of hunting. So they can get very specific, or they can just do a bobcat season like turkey season and everything else.
Sure. Back to wetlands, I can recall being in Commerce years ago, and at that time, the chairman, who's now deceased, I mean, I've seen these home building associations, and by the way, some of these are actually members of the legislature, too.
We have a lot of home builders now. We have so many more home builders than we do teachers.
And so there's the conflict of interest, you know, concept comes up, but yet when you're a citizen legislature, that's kind of hard to say there's a conflict when you all have to have regular jobs. But I can recall an amendment in committee where they're literally trying to get rid of wetlands, basically because it is a wetland. Why would you build a home in a flood zone? But yet they were trying to remove those protections. How do you get insurance for a home that typically is going to flood every 7 to 10 years? But yet they wanted to remove those restrictions when that's not really in the homeowner's best interest now or 40 years from now. But yet,
that is an excellent question.
Someone gives an example that, oh, we could build more homes there if we didn't have to worry about this being a wetlands, and to hell with the wetlands. I just don't get it. It just makes no sense. In the last 3 or 4 minutes that we've got, what do you want your constituents to know about what took place this session, Tanya?
Well, they claimed it was going to be a pretty non-controversial session, and it ended up controversial.
And what made the controversy, I guess?
Oh, you know, like the higher ed bill and just all kinds of things. But what I would want listeners to know is that, you know, at the end of the day, we passed too many bills. We passed over 175 bills in 9 weeks.
And wow.
That's a lot of bills. But I still continue to really like representing Terre Haute, West Terre Haute, and Sevierville and the west side of the state. One of my personal missions as a representative, and I'm sure you did the same thing, was to get attention on the west side of the state. So many times we talk about Indianapolis and the donut communities.
Right.
And, you know, we're pretty rural out here, but, we need funds too. And so my big push is for I-70 still. I've been told it's going to come back next year. I'm trying to get three lanes from the state line of Illinois all the way to Indianapolis and then Indianapolis to the other side.
Makes sense. It needs it. Yep. And you mentioned West Central Indiana. That reminds me, what about the LEAP project out of Boone County? I mean, we had the situation where one of the candidates running for governor, apparently when he was behind the scenes putting that LEAP district together for the Economic Development Commission, there was that language about, hey, we got to have 100 million gallons of water piped in per day from West Central Indiana. When local officials started realizing what this was all about, a lot of people are pretty upset across that part of the state.
Yeah, and I think they still are. So we had two bills that were filed and were not heard. So right now...
Not even heard. For water.
Not even talk about. We have no water rights in Indiana. So basically, if you live in Illinois, you can come and still, quote unquote, from the Wabash River. So we don't have water rights in Indiana. And I thought for sure we'd at least start this conversation, because anyone, Boone County, go over to the left, anyone southern of Boone County, which is us, of course, you know, the Wabash River, that affects us as well.
Absolutely.
So apparently right now it's all been on hold. I'm pretty sure it was on hold until we left the General Assembly. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because we need to protect our water.
So the Indiana Finance Authority apparently will do some kind of a study and report back to the governor and the General Assembly. Is that what we're waiting for?
That is what we were told.
Okay. It doesn't pass the smell test on you. It just doesn't. I wish people would wake up, because, and I would admit this too, I mean, you and I are members of the Democrat Party, but if it was the other way around on the composition in our state, where just one party dominates total control, I mean, some of the most simplest things. I mean, water, long-term water supply, and the majority party won't even have a hearing on it. That's troubling.
I think it's very troubling, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what side you're on. We're not making good bills for all Hoosiers. And that's the saddest thing about the system, is because at the end of the day, you know, everyone look around where we are. You know, these bills affect us. And if you just have one-sided bills, it's just not good.
Well, and you can't hold legislators accountable if you can't even, like, you know, ask basic questions or get basic information. You mentioned the $1 billion missing from Medicaid. That's a problem.
And we kept asking, and I still couldn't tell you where it is, because we got no good answers, because they said, we don't really have to tell you.
Wow. That's kind of frustrating. You know what's good about when you quit beating your head against the wall? It feels so much better when you stop that, Tanya. But you're going to run again, right?
I am. I still enjoy it. It is a great challenge, and I do believe that even being in the minority, we can get things done.
Well, you are doing a good job, and I appreciate you doing this, because it's not easy being in the minority. And I only had to do that one term out of 12, and that was definitely a different landscape versus being in the majority, because when you're in the majority, your side gets to run the whole show, and you get a lot done. But
right.
when you're on the minority side, you just kind of watch this truck go by. And
you have a lot of conversations.
You do indeed.
You're trying
to get their attention, but I just don't like where we're at right now at both the state General Assembly as well as the Congress. We're just not doing enough to be, I would call it, productive and, I guess, efficient. And I guess I'd like to see that change, and I know you would too.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, you need to go vote.
That's the bottom line.
It's vote.
If you don't vote, it's hard to complain, isn't it?
It sure is.
Representative Tanya Paff, she's from Terre Haute. And if people want to reach you, I guess they can find you on the IN.gov website, right?
That and Facebook, Tanya Paff for Indiana.
Okay. Thanks again for your service, and thanks for being on the program, Tanya. You have a great day.
Hey, thank you so much.
Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks is a production of the DLC Media News Department. Downloads of this program and past shows are available at any one of our DLC Media radio station websites. Follow me on X or Facebook to learn who is appearing next week, as well as the times and list of radio stations where you can hear the show first. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.